Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We
There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and fans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Brooks.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
The cash cow known as the NFL preseason is officially open. And you know the Olympics provided us with memorable moments, both on the field of play and off. All I got to do is ask, has anybody got a key to the bathroom? We'll talk about that later, kind of get that going on. Conor McGregor insults the WWE and survives his rematch with Diaz. And as always, we thank you for joining us for the next 90 minutes. Brought to you by Blog Talk Radio, we welcome you to One Mic by RSG. I'm in the house with my guy, Hank. And we are blessed to be on iTunes, so check us out on there and give us some feedback in terms of our review. Hopefully we get a 5 rating review, but does anybody have a key? Lock me. Now, we've been talking about off the air. We could play the off the air stuff before we go to the show. Some of that material is probably better than stuff you might hear live on the air. But, man, he came out portraying himself as Nino Brown, but turned out to be Steve Stifler. What's going on with Lockney? Man, you heard about this. What was your opinion? What were your thoughts?
Look, you know, it was it, first of all, I'd like to say hello to everybody out there in Radio Land. You know, we're a few days away from the start of my favorite time of the year, you know, college football. And for me, you know, it's the most wonderful time of the year. But anyway, getting back to what we talking about today, Scott Lochte. Man, he had the whole world running sympathy for him. Like, oh, my God, here it is, United States Olympic gold medalist. He is robbed at gunpoint in Rio. What kind of country is this? How in the world could this possibly happen? What happened to security? What happened? Where was the bathroom locked? That's what we need to find out. Where was the bathroom locked? You know, that's what I'd like to know. And how do you get, you know, why would you tap a bathroom in Rio? Why would you do that? You know, you just won the gold medal. There was no bathroom between the pool and that place where you to go take a piss. You had to tap that bathroom and then take your boys with you. You know, I mean, come on. They bad boys. What y'all do that for?
I'm telling you, now I'm going to, I mean, and the thing about it is classic, where I say Stifler and any character, like the classic thing about it is it breaks down, it shatters, and look up, he at home looking back at it and his boys is caught in Rio. Like that's the classic. He's like the lead dog causing all the problems. He got the history of doing this. You know, he had 3 citations at Florida. He had 1 for public urination. So he got a history for doing this. And then yet, in classic form, his boys are left to deal with all the craziness. He at home tweeting, doing. You know it's down. It's a public relations thing when you're doing a one-on-one interview with Matt Lauer. You know, the whole image recovery thing was on. It was classic. And if he had just told the folks what happened, like if he just told the story the way it was, he probably would have got some sense of sympathy. Like, yeah, I messed up. Yeah, I did this. But it didn't warrant somebody putting a gun in my face and asking me for $400. I was a little out of order. If he had done that, it would have stayed minor. And then why do you tell your mama that? That's the part I can't figure out. Like, your mama asked you, said, this is the story. Like, what did your mama ask you for you to tell your story? I don't understand that. Like, why you bring your mama in it?
Right. I mean, the thing that gets me about it, like, it was just so unnecessary. You know, the one thing they talked about down in Rio was this green slime that they had in one of those pools. They claimed that it was supposed to be safe, but obviously he must have got a little bit on the brain, because for him to go down there and act like that and do those things, unnecessarily. We were talking off air. You know, he got a citation in Florida and for public urination. You got to be a special kind of stupid to get a citation for public urination. Listen. Every man in America that took a piss outside at least one time in his life, and don't sit up there and say you never have, because you will, okay? But you know well enough and good to get somewhere or have somebody do some lookout so you can handle your business and move on. For him to do, what was he doing, walking down the middle of the main street saying, look at this, y'all pardon me while I whip this out? Really? This is a gold medalist. Listen, he wasn't even a frontline story, okay? Michael Phelps was doing work. He was all over the swimming news. All over the swimming news. Oh, Lochte couldn't handle that. He couldn't handle that. Somebody got to be talking about me someplace. So now can't nobody shut up about him. There are some people that's talking about him, though, that I know he's not too happy about. You know, Speedo, Ralph Lauren, Airweave, Gentle Hair Removal. They're not going to be talking about him no more because he lost those endorsements. Okay? So here you go. Now you can public pee all you want to, and you without your Speedos on, now you got to go to Walmart and get them drawers and wear them.
and you know Speedo had to do it, given the number of folks who in Rio and in Brazil who buy swimwear and what it's known for in the visionary beach volleyball and all that. So, I mean, when you think about your global presence, Brazil is one of those places, and so you just knew Speedo was going to be like, we can't have you. You messing up a key market for us. We got to make a business decision.
International incident. I mean, he had the nation believing that American athletes were robbed at the Olympics. Okay, now, you know, on the surface, it might seem kind of comical, but if you look at the history behind this, if you remember the 72 games, the Munich Games, when the Israel athletes were killed in their hotel room.
Yeah.
Okay, this was nothing to really be laughed at, okay? This was something that people took serious, those who know better. And so for him to come out here and say this, he did kind of add a little bit of a panic. So anybody who knows a little bit about the history, okay, of trying to keep these athletes safe, he really did step on some real bad toes here. You know, just to kind of throw a little seriousness. It's stupid on the surface, but in depth, you can't have anybody representing your country, your company, you know, that just frivolously do things like that. You know, and again, he was only a second-tier story until he got to this.
When you look at this, it is a story, right? But how do you think it impacted the overall Olympics, you know, and particularly the performance? I mean, even you think about the swim team dominated. Like, how do you think it impacted those efforts and the overall feeling of the Olympics, given some of the amazing performances that we saw, when you think about it from that perspective?
I think once we saw how it panned out, Lochte looked a lot worse than he probably ever thought he would with this story. I think it became very quickly a second-page story. I mean, it was front page when they thought it actually happened, but once they found out he was a liar, you know, they immediately vilified him, so not to take away the luster from what I thought was a very well-run Olympics. And, again, you think about what was said about Rio, going into the Olympics, the concerns they had about Zika virus, the concerns they had about safety and civil unrest. I thought that the games went off very well. I thought it was it was very watchable. A lot of history that was made in those Olympics, it kept you captivated. I thought it was very well run. I thought there was something to see all the time for that 2 weeks it was on the air.
Yeah, I think the only glitch I saw was the one relay team that was taken to another venue instead of going to relay, and they had to shuffle it was like it was a semifinal relay. They had to shuffle that. But for the most part, I think everything went off the way it was supposed to, and it had some of the most amazing, events that we've seen in Olympics in a long time. You know, speaking of that, what were some of your highlight moments that you took away from the Olympic experience? I'm a big Olympics player. I watch a lot of different sports, but what did you take away from this Olympics, and what were some of the highlights?
Well, let me tell you, I'm one of those old schoolers. You know, I wait around, you know, to see the track and field, and I wait around to maybe watch a little bit of the basketball. But you know, you were blind in one eye and can't see out the other one. If you didn't notice the remarkable feat of the women's gymnastics team, okay, just an awesome performance by Simone Biles. But I have to say this. I'm going to have to hit a quote from an old 1985 tune by the Eurythmics featuring Aretha Franklin, which was called Sisters Is Doing It For Themselves. I have to mention Simone Manuel, the first African-American woman to win an individual Olympic gold in swimming and set an Olympic record. She didn't just win to get a gold medal. She set an Olympic gold record and an American record. Okay, an African-American woman. Now, you got to understand the significance behind that, okay? I mean, those stereotypes that black folks can't swim. Okay, I'm going to put it out there. We on blog radio, so I can do that. But she that impressed me. That impressed me. And then I also have to speak about Michelle Carter, you know, since I'm doing that. Michelle Carter won a woman's gold medal for shot put. First ever in the United States in that event, okay? Another African-American woman, black woman, in shot put. Now, I always knew that black women could throw something, and they got pinpoint accuracy. I know that from my mother, you know. But to see her throw something, 16-pound ball, and to win this shot put, I have to tell you, I was very impressed. I was very proud for them, for the whole team, but especially for the sisters who was doing it for themselves.
Yeah, I think I would add to that. I think that was, an amazing moment when you think about, the gymnasts and the achievement they have, the way in which they dominated. I mean, they dominated in ways that historically have never been done. I agree with Emmanuel. I think the look on her face when she looked up and saw that she won the gold was amazing, because I think you could have had this barrier broken a long time ago. But when you have stereotypes like that, unless you have forward thinking families and parents who understand the value of engaging, and when you engage in a sport that is where you don't see many role models, that makes it even more important. As a daughter who swam and did synchronize and did some of those things, I mean, it's something that is very important. Another woman that I want to be able to, given that, you know, both of us are from Michigan, is Clarissa Shields, who won her second gold medal in boxing from Flint, Michigan, and understanding how difficult the plight was. And when you really understand her story, and the way that she had to overcome, physical abuse as a young person twice, and then the way in which she really turned that into a drive for her as a boxer, and just the amazing talent she is. And she, I think she won in London and then won again here in Rio. Was an amazing story. Obviously, what Phelps did was incredible, and you noted that before. But at the end of the day, there are certain marquee events, as you said, things that have gone back to the beginning of the Olympics. And track and field has always been that cornerstone. And the 100 and the 200 have been important events, have been all eyes. And nobody did his thing more so than Usain Bolt. When you think about the fact that and the way he did it, I mean, the semifinal one in the 100 where he kind of looked at the cat and has been memeing all over the place was just hilarious. But
that was highlight, man. Grinning like, yeah.
and the way in which he embraced the moment, which really amazes me, because you know these are world class athletes that he's competing mm-hmm. against, and he is so relaxed, and he's doing this at an advanced age, which is still
yeah.
amazing, and doing a 100, 200, and a relay. I mean, that
mm-hmm.
and people are like trying to compare him and Phelps's feet, and I'm just saying, and I agree with some of the folks I've heard. The reason why the 100 and the 200 are so, because it's something that just about every country competes in.
Right.
You know, I think what Phelps did was amazing, but when you're talking about an event that from the beginning of time that just like everybody competes in. Now,
mm-hmm.
I do say people lost their mind because they don't also recognize, even though he has all these records, but when you think about complete feats, I mean, I think sometimes people forget about Carl Lewis, who did
right.
all those things, plus he did the long jump.
Yeah,
and so I think sometimes that gets lost when you talk about running all those events, but then you also do the long jump. I think people can't forget the fact that Carl Lewis was so dominant for so long in all of those
mm-hmm.
events. And so,
mm-hmm.
but Bolt is was amazing, man. Can't even clown on him like that.
No,
love him.
I mean,
love
if he was the celebrity of those events. You waited. You
yeah.
wanted to see him run, okay? It was Bolt and everybody else, all right? He,
that's
you
right.
remember, and I'm going to date myself a little bit too. He kind of reminds me of how Edwin Moses was in the hurdles, okay?
Yeah.
It's like you watched the hurdles because you wanted to see Edwin Moses. He was fluent getting over the hurdle. It was effortless. He was so good,
yes.
it was effortless for him. And that's how Bolt runs. Okay, he's moving down that track almost like a machine, and so if
yes.
you just appreciate just the fluidity of the athlete, you're watching that. You're really watching art. Okay, you're not you kind of get out of
mm-hmm.
watching competition. You're actually watching art. You're watching an artist at work, and that's kind of what you get. And that's the kind of picture I put out there when I'm watching the Olympics and I'm watching track and field. You're watching something that is effortless. You're watching like an Edwin Moses just glide over hurdles. These hurdles are like 3-4 feet, okay? And it just
yeah.
glides over. Or a Bolt going, you know, just glides down the track. You know, it's like it's beauty. It's poetry in motion. It really is.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on and just electrifying in a way that just energized the Olympics. And so – I mean, I think we were fortunate. And then Ledecky is another one. She was beating folks. Like, when she was swimming one direction. Everybody else was swimming the other direction.
Yeah.
I mean, she hit the wall. She hit the wall, looked at the clock, ordered some pizza, and they still had not made it. And she only 19 years old. Like,
yeah.
like everybody talking about Phelps, but I'm like, she the most dominant swimmer. I mean, she beating folks like that. Between her and our national women's basketball team, I don't know who's more dominant.
Yeah,
I mean, she beating
right.
folks like,
right.
and that's swimming. Like she swimming like she almost lapping folks. I'm like, I've never seen anything like that in my life.
But you
and
know
then
she's
gonna go back to school and start Stanford.
Right, see, and but you know, I have to marvel at I got to go back to Lochte for a minute now. See, do
yeah.
you recall? I got to go back just for a minute because you remember when there was all of this turmoil and hoopla about Michael Phelps, you know, being caught smoking marijuana or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you ask yourself, okay, now here's the best swimmer in the world. He's on chill. He's on chill with a half a dozen medals plus two. He on chill. This dude goes and tears up the bathroom, wins one gold medal, and loses all of his doggone endorsements. Somebody got to give him something. I'm not promoting nothing like that, but somebody got to give him something.
Man, you hit it right on the head. I'm like, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm still trying to get over why he told his mama that, but we,
all night on that.
You know, I'm gonna leave it alone. I'm gonna leave it alone. I'm gonna leave it alone. You can't lie to mama like that, you know.
Maybe he was rehearsing.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's when he was rehearsing.
you know, man. I don't know. My mama would be. She a short woman. She'd be hitting me over the head with something. That wouldn't be going down.
No. That was my mama. I'd still be in Rio. I'm not
like,
coming back yet.
Putting up with that?
Heck no.
You got me all on international television looking crazy.
Oh my God! Look at they had the news out there having her whooping my old butt down the street.
We can't go down like that.
My mama whooped me so bad down the street. I'd pee on myself, then I'd get a citation for public urination.
I'm gonna tell you this, man. So we can't leave these Olympics without talking about Melo. You know, and I tell you, I love Carmelo. I've been a Carmelo fan since his days at Syracuse. Loving. You know, he had some struggles when he went to Denver, but, you know, his team's always made the playoffs. And, you know, he's been a steadfast. He's an Olympic team. I think, was it 2004 or whatever it was, that lost to Argentina. And, I mean, you didn't realize until after this was over that he had made a commitment to himself to try to restore the Olympic team. But a lot of folks have been on him just about the way in which both positive and negative about the way he's been acting with the games, that he's placing such a high thing on this when they feel like, you know, he's, you know, there's a lot of New York fans that we should see some of this translate into his play, you know, during the season. And so what do you think? I really enjoy Carmelo, but what did you think about Carmelo and how it ended? And, he was emotional that this was going to be the last Olympics. You know, how did you react to that?
You know what? I can't take Melo seriously. Okay? I'm sorry. I'm glad you like him. You know, and quite frankly, he's an amazing scorer. I can't take Melo seriously. Listen, okay? The United States Olympic basketball team, they're professional NBA basketball players, okay? You're supposed to win. All right? I don't care. Yeah, there's some NBA players on other teams, but all of your team is comprised of NBA basketball players that go against other NBA basketball players for 6 months out the year. You're supposed to win, okay? The medal is just what you're supposed to do. Now, I could understand this if this was his first one, but I can understand if I'm a New York Knicks fan, I would be a little bit upset too. I'm like, hold on a second, all right? I want to see that passion out here too. I mean, don't give me that. Oh, I'm so happy. You're supposed to win. Okay? Look, this is equivalent to stacking your team on PlayStation, winning the championship, and then rolling up in the face, and it's your 18th championship. You own all the records. What are you getting upset about? Okay? I get that. You're supposed to win. All right? And people are, oh, give me a break. Give me a break, okay? Sometimes these athletes, they throw me with this stuff, okay? I'm glad you won. You're supposed to win, okay? If you ain't going to play no more because you're too old, okay. But then you might want to let the Knicks know that too. You're supposed to win. Don't give me that. Let me stop. I'm not buying that car. It ain't got no steering wheel and one of the tires is missing.
So this is, and somebody was talking about this today, because one of the things I think Boeheim said was was that, you know, definitely Melo should be recognized for his efforts in the Olympics and his championship at Syracuse. But his argument about Melo is that, you know, Melo's never really been in a serious position to make a run for the championship. And then, so one of the things that people looked at is that, you know, when you look at Melo's only, I think, played with two All-Stars on all, any of the teams he's ever played on.
That's Melo's fault.
Well, he actually played with two in Denver. He played with Chauncey and Iverson well past their mark. That wasn't
right.
Actually, that wasn't Melo's fault in Denver. That wasn't Melo's fault in Denver.
But he didn't have to
Melo
resign. He did not have to resign with New York. He took money to stay in New York. He knew New York was a dumpster fire when he decided to stay there. He could have went anywhere he wanted to be. If he wanted to lessen his
role
and play with a championship team, he didn't want to do that.
I will give you that point. But when he came to New York, they came to New York with the promise they was building something.
Yeah.
Right.
Granted.
So that was part of it. I give you the Chicago one I never thought about, but also Melo might be like, you know, I'm a superstar. People supposed to come play with me. You know, see, because if you go that route, then everybody keeps you like LeBron. But if he sits here and says, like, look, people supposed to come play with me in New York. Now, if he has
people are like, you should have left for
Chicago.
Nobody in their right mind was going to New York. Seeing what New York was, okay, and other teams
did,
was willing to take him.
Look what they just
did for a championship.
Look what they just did with KD.
Huh?
He was basically doing the KD. Look what they just did to KD.
Yeah, I know.
For going to Golden State, they would have done the same thing if he would have gone to Chicago. They would have been talking to Chuck about him going to Chicago at that point with Derrick Rose. The same way they talk about KD.
But my point is this.
He just witnessed them blast LeBron.
Huh?
They just witnessed him blasting LeBron.
Fine. But if you're going to sit here and cry, but if you're going to cry these crocodile tears about a gold medal, okay, this is what I'm talking about. If you're going to cry these crocodile tears about a gold medal, all right, then where is that same level of passion and determination to try to pull an NBA Finals championship? All right, this is what I'm saying. All right, is there the ego there? You got to play team ball. You got a coach that's not gonna put up with your crap as much. All right, you don't pick your coach in the Olympics. All right, you choose to play, and that coach plays his system. That's what Krzyzewski did. That's what they did. All right,
mm-hmm.
But now you had an
mm-hmm.
opportunity, and this is what fans is getting ticked off about because you stayed in New York, okay, and everybody
mm-hmm.
went, oh, you wanted to stay at home, fine. All right, you wanted to stay at home. You're from New York, you want to play in New York. Fine, I get that. All right, but you don't sit here and talk about championships because it's a business. And you had an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to get the money. Now you're going to have folks believe who know better that I'm glad you won your gold medal, but it ain't the first one you don't want. All right, so you're not going to play no more. So all of a sudden you all emotional. I'm sorry, again, that car's a living to me. Not buying it.
You heard it, y'all. Hank ain't living on no love. You know that's that Michigan stuff right there. You know it's pretty the hard way when you come out of there. It's like we're not giving you no love out there. You either in it or you not. You either in it or you not. When we come back, we're gonna transition into some college football preview. We got a couple questions we're gonna ask. You know, Hank loves college football, so we don't get too deep in it because we're going to continue in all our future podcasts with what Mike talking college football stuff. But we're going to kind of just tease it up because, we're getting into some of the big weekends coming up. And, you know, we got a couple questions we want to kind of mill over a little bit so that we can kind of get our minds right as this college football season is coming up. So we will talk about it when we come back after this musical interlude. All right. Well, we're back.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the real sports guys. Whoopig.
You know, I got to give a shout-out to my guy, Brett Bielema. Yeah, that's football season. So I'm loving it.
Hi,
right
this is
now.
Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the real sports guys. Whoopig.
Got to give my shout-out to Brett Bielema. Yeah, I'm going to keep doing it. Brett, I might do one more time for you. We love it, baby. It's football season, Brett. It's football season. And you know
you're
what that
help
means.
You understand one thing, though. Okay?
Yeah.
He must have put a curse on y'all down up there in Wisconsin. What did y'all do to deserve that schedule y'all got?
I don't even want to
that's
talk about it. I haven't had a chance. Hopefully, I'm hoping to get Coach Chris on here before we get too quick in the season. I'm trying to make some arrangements, so hopefully I can get him on. And I mean, he has been dealt a pretty crazy hand. You know, he's a great guy. I think he'll figure out how to get around it. But it's a tough schedule. Ain't no lie to it. You got LSU up in Lambeau. You got a couple games in there in between. Then you go to Michigan. You got to play Michigan State. I think there's a short break in there. So you got to come back to Ohio State. I mean, right in a row. And that's before getting – I mean, the rest of the schedule isn't chopped liver. So, you know, if he can find a way to get through some of that maybe with one loss or whatever, he can look good. But it's
a tough
schedule.
They got to be ranked in the top five. I mean, that's a murderous road. They stay in the state of Michigan for 2 weeks in a row, then come home to Ohio State. You know, I think your coach has got to be in therapy for that. I mean, it's like that's not fair nowhere. Then you're starting with LSU. So you got – and then you got like six teams on your schedule who all won 10 games last year, I think. Boy, that's insanity.
That's insanity. And, you know, like I said, I'm hoping to get him on. I know it looks like they might be starting a freshman quarterback. And so hopefully we'll get a chance to hear from him and get a sense of how he's going to deal with it. And then you lost one of the top, you know, defensive coordinators, if the top defensive coordinator in the country. As well. So, you know, that's a lot to fill up. But, you know, I've been watching them. They're getting ready. But like you said, it's one of the toughest schedules in the country. So, the Badger fans are going to be entertained because they can see. Huh?
Yeah, if any second-year coach deserves a pass, I don't think that it's fair if he takes any heat this year. I mean, that schedule is brutal. I looked at that schedule, and it's like, you know, I can't stand Wisconsin, but I feel sorry for him. That's not right.
And I think where he's fortunate enough, and I think that's where it becomes fortunate sometimes to have an AD who's been a head coach like Barry Alvarez, who understands what that means and is usually thinking about it on the long play and not getting caught up in the short play moment. Now I don't know how the fans are. You know, I think Chris will get a little bit because, you know, he's a product. He's a home state guy. So I think he's going to get some love from the fans in a way that even Brett didn't quite get in the early years of his transition from Alvarez. I think Chris will get some of that. But, you know, part of it is I think because Alvarez, you know, because he's coached, understands how difficult this task is. But it could be an opportunity for him to use it as a recruiting opportunity to kind of schedule their plan. Is an opportunity to recruit, and particularly at the quarterback position and some of the skill positions. They always, with offensive line, they've been doing well on defense, but it's in that quarterback position, really solidifying that quarterback position. And, you know, they've always had great tight ends, but utilizing the tight ends the way they've done historically, because that's important against teams like LSU and some of these teams with great defenses, is their ability to stay with tight ends. And that's what Wisconsin has played them well. Is because they've always had these at least one or two tight ends that they could always be that relief valve. And if you look at the NFL, it's littered with tight ends from Wisconsin. So that stuff Chris understands, you know, and I think in that way they share a similar system to even Michigan in the way Harbaugh runs it. I think it's similar style of play and why those two programs would be set. And also similar, I would say, to how Saban coaches in Alabama in terms of the process in the way in which he attacks it. So it's gonna be interesting. I would feel much better about the schedule if I'm able to see how the transition with defense and the defensive coordinator is going.
Right.
Because I knew what I had with Landon. You know, I knew what I had with the previous coordinator. you know, he had him in the top five defenses, and that's what you need against a schedule like that. And if they don't lose anything there, then I think that'll help the offense come along. But as you say, it's hard to recover. The one thing, and you and I know this from understanding the Big Ten in ways that people don't. When you got to go to Ann Arbor and to Michigan State, the thing about it, when you come out of games like that, you're not the same. It's like fighting against a great boxer who's a body puncher. Like,
right.
You'll win, but you're going to lose. Like, you usually need 2 weeks when you just play one of those teams because of the way they play, and particularly Michigan State. And now I think where Michigan is, when you play teams like that are very physical, even if you win, you lose. Because you come out of that following week, and that's why it's good to, you know, have a team that you can play that you can bounce back against. And that's what I worry about, your ability to recover when you play physical games like that. And LSU is like that. But then they got two games to recover after LSU before they go to Ann Arbor. But they don't have that same turnaround from Ann Arbor to East Lansing. You know,
right.
And then they got to
break that off. But not just the physical, but you're also looking at that mental, you know, the letdown factor. I mean, how do you get up, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in a row, especially with that gauntlet of a Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. And that's where I'm saying the Big Ten is getting closer to that SEC feel now, where all these games are the kind of competitiveness you begin to see down in the SEC a little bit, is because of the coaches that we now have coming into the league. And I think you'll begin to see that play out in terms of how, when they start playing these out-of-conference games, you'll see how some of these teams are playing. That's important. And that kind of raised the issue. One of the questions I really want to go over first as we kind of think about college football, you know, at first, when we first did a rundown, I was like, we're going to do the typical thing. What's your top 10? And do the list. And then I was like, nah, we got to do this RSG way. And the way in which we do this, and if you have a chance, check out our big show. That's another podcast, the RSG Big Show. You'll get this theme from us in it, is that we always ask these questions about, rather than lists, we talk about who you can trust and who you can't trust. We got that can't trust it list in basketball. And it's famous. If you listen to our podcast, if you had a chance to listen to it, go back, check us out on iTunes, look for Real Sports Guys. But go back and look at our NCAA stuff, and you'll hear our can't trust it list. This is where if you hear other people using this, I've heard some other folks, it started with us. You know, if you hear somewhere else, you know, Hank has brought it out, I brought it out, Game Changer, Affiliate, somebody on the platform, like, we underground, we like the wake-up show, you know. Stuff happens here, then it shows up on your big-time platforms. So I said, well, let's do it in the RSG way. Like, who can we trust and who can't we trust? Forget lists. We all know who we can't trust and who we're going to trust. So we're going to say that it can't trust, because that's usually our crazy one. Hank, who, whether it's a team or like a program or a coach, who you trust?
What,
when you look at potential national champion or, you know, being in a running that you just feel like they're going to deliver the way you think they're going to deliver. It don't necessarily mean they got to be Alabama, but you just think if it's an expectation for them to deliver this way, they're going to deliver this way. Who are the programs you totally trust what they're going to do?
Well, let me tell you, I'm staying at home on this one. Okay, this one's easy. You basically gave me an alley oop on this one. I can go 360 on this one and dunk it down without even getting off the ground. You know, I'm taking Captain Khaki. You know, Jim Harbaugh. And let me explain that. This isn't just a homer pick. Okay, you have to know and see what we see all the time. Okay, Michigan was a 5-17. All right, and even the most avid Michigan fan knew that that team was in trouble. All right? They knew that team was in trouble when Jim Harbaugh took over. He immediately doubled their win totals in the first year with a transfer quarterback that had got that basically got demoted from Iowa. All right? He comes back with the number 5 recruiting class. And now this team is, for the first time in about 15 years, ranked in the top 10. All right, why I trust him is not so much because of the theatrics that we all keep talking about. I trust him because the man is a downright good coach. His pedigree speaks for him, not just in the coaching game, but in the professional game. He took a 5-11 San Francisco 49er team got them to two NFC championship, three NFC championship games, two rather, and the Super Bowl. Okay, and was one play away from winning the Super Bowl. So you, when you see the resurrection of a story program that quickly, we just got through talking about the resurrection or the that the Big Ten is starting to get that SEC feel. That's because one of its key components is back to relevance, and that's Michigan. And that's Jim Harbaugh that's done that. He's brought the Big Ten back to a sense of relevance where now the rest of those teams have a little bit more cachet as well because Michigan is back. And I don't mean no knock on any other team, but when the Big Ten was the Big Two a little late, that was because you had Michigan, Ohio State. That is now significant again, and that's why I trust that coach.
And I'll start, like, two people I know I can trust, and regardless of my team affiliation, off this list I'm taking people like I can trust Urban Meyer and I can trust Saban. They just have done it, right? But other people that I can say, well, can I trust them? You know, are they going to deliver on the product that we think they're going to deliver on? Are they going to be good? I would say Jimbo Fisher at Florida State and what they're doing is a program that I can trust. And I would say Dabo Sweeney. For a long time, Clemson was probably like my Villanova of basketball, a program that, you know, they just tease you and they let you down in the end. But I think given their performance of the past year, I believe that they are legitimately set to be that team. In a sense, you know, in some senses, the Hank just brought this up that they are similar to, you know, what Michigan and Ohio State were in the Big Ten. Given the dominance, the Florida State and Clemson at this point are those teams that you have to pay attention to. But you can trust that they're going to be there at the end, that the players are going to play big in the big games, that the coaches are going to have them ready in ways that are going to be there. And I'm confident that, you know, I think, you know, for Florida State, you know, when I retired, you know, people were worried. But Jimbo is got that recruiting line set and is doing what he's got to do. And I like what they're doing at Clemson in terms of the talent that they got there. Obviously, they got the Heisman Trophy candidate there. But I think they have turned the corner. So those are two programs that I can trust. Now, we've got what we call the vaunted can't trust it list. Now, if you listen to our basketball, I've been notorious on my trust list. So, like, the funniest thing about Game Changer is that, you know, he got Duke on his can't trust it list when it comes. And it drives, we have many of our close listeners and colleagues who are Duke fans, they go crazy, you know, when he talks about Duke. I've always talked about, Kansas. Kansas basketball will get you salivating. And then when it comes to turn of the time, man, they just don't bring it. And so we said, well, what about this with football? And so this coach that I'm going to talk about, well, let me tell you like this. I'll start this out. The program that I haven't been able to trust is called my Villanova of football, is Georgia. Georgia comes in every year. Boy, out here, Bill McFarland and all these cats, all these SEC cats. Now, Booker's usually pretty good about this, but cats will salivate over Georgia. And Rick, you know, obviously they let Rick go, and they will always find a way. I mean, I feel bad. You know, I got family down in Atlanta. I feel bad. You know, my niece is kind of looking at Georgia. I feel bad for Georgia fans. I remember the days of Herschel Walker. and in how dominant Hurts was, Bulldogs or Georgia Dogs, and I believe played at Georgia, Love Hines, but they have never. I felt like it, given that they were in the SEC East, which has been down for so long, it was like it's a layup for them. Like they should come out of the SEC East pretty much unscathed, ready to take on whoever comes out of the West. And they just never could take advantage of it, man. It just disappointed me. Now, Rick is gone, and usually that's because I was talking about Rick, and Rick is gone to Miami. And Rick going to Miami will resurrect his career in a way that I think he will win a championship in Miami. I think there's something about that space that will help him. But Georgia is still – Georgia figures out how to make that talent equal the expectation. And Georgia is on my can't-trust-it list. The other one on my can't-trust-it list is one of our former Michigan head coaches and who came down there in Bayou Country. Now, he's won a national championship, Les Miles. And we can't get on him. But Les will do more crazy things in a football game than anybody ever seen. He will drive you crazy with some of the decisions he'll make in game decisions, which has kind of got him on the hot seat. They've got more talent, but I don't understand. This is the part that kills me. Is what talent as these folks talk about, as much super quarterback camps as we've had in the country, the way in which we're developing quarterback play in high school and junior high, how is it that Alabama and LSU never have a quarterback worth anything? How is that possible in this day and age? Where I think it is the most, we have probably the greatest pipeline of young quarterback talent because of the way in which we develop them. And yet, a team like LSU always has quarterback problems. I bring it back in Fournette, but never has a quarterback. I don't understand. It just does not make sense to me, given how attractive they are. So that's I can't trust them because I don't know what Miles going to do. It's going to be – it will be 4th-and-7 inside his own 20. He might fake punt. I just don't know what he's going to do.
That's why they call him the Mad Hatter.
I'm not fired. Mad Hatter. And he almost Mad Hatted his butt right out of Baton Rouge. So that's a person that I can't quite trust. The other thing that I can't quite is UCLA. People have been talking about UCLA for like the past 3 or 4 years.
Tell me about
And everybody talk about the Pac-12, and they ain't doing anything. Don't tell me nothing about UCLA or even USC. I got more confidence in USC. But y'all better be glad y'all got the Rams or y'all at least got the Clippers, because I don't know what the college football team's doing out there. But I can't trust UCLA. I mean, they've been talking about UCLA since our boy departed for Seattle, and they still ain't figured out how to take over L.A. So I can't trust UCLA. So those are a few that I have out there. I do have one more, but I don't want to piss off a lot of Irish fans. Like, as much as I talk about the Irish, they ain't really delivered in the way I think they should deliver. You know, the Irish are like the college version of the Cowboys, living on a lot of wins in the 70s and 80s. I ain't seen nothing in years. At least give me the 90s. You know, even when we talk about Michigan, we at least talking about the 90s. Notre Dame, boy, we was over there watching back in the 70s trying to sneak into Michigan Stadium. That's my little thing. I will document you, brother.
Okay, listen, you took one of mine because I was going to say UCLA because Jim Mora Jr. is some of the finest talent in college football, and they lay more eggs in the hen house. It don't make sense. You know, beautiful campus. It should be the Michigan of the West, but that team underachieves for no reason. For no reason at all. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't trust them. You know, but let's continue to move on. Oklahoma. You didn't mention Oklahoma.
I left that one for you.
Listen, Bob Stoops been over there since the Dust Bowl. Okay? This is a team that won their one championship, then has figured out a way to get rolled upon every year. Okay? Baker Mayfield is a nice player. All right? But I promise you that for everybody's mentioning Oklahoma this year, they're going to lose a game they ain't got no business losing. All right? And Bob Stoops has been over there. You would think that he would rival schools in the SEC and the Big Ten as long as he's been over there. But he's untrustworthy. Untrustworthy as far as getting it all the way to the end. Let's move on to another one. The most glamorous school, I guess, as far as colors and uniforms, put Nike put them on the back, Oregon. Okay? Another fun and gun, but ain't got none type of school. All right? Their coaches, Kelly's gone to the NFL, all right, and have been to a couple of national championship games and broken the hearts of the Ducks. What kind of name is a duck anyway for a nickname? I don't get it. But I'm just saying, you know, now, you know, their name is out there, but Oregon doesn't scare anybody. If you play good defense, then guess what? You beat Oregon. They don't play any defense, but they're out there. Everybody say you got to be careful of them. You got to be careful of them. Now, granted, they've gone to a couple of national championship games, but, you know, when you go back and you look at it, you ask yourself how. How did that actually happen? And I got one for you, D. You're not going to be happy with this one, but I'm going to put it out there anyway. Arkansas. And now let me tell you something. You know, your boy come from Big Ten country, won all these Big Ten championships, you know, Dodge, Michigan, but I ain't saying nothing. But then he goes down to SEC country. Now, you know, he's supposed to be getting better recruits. They're supposed to be really doing their thing, but Arkansas is only a middle-of-the-road team. Now, I know that the people down there in Fayetteville, or I think that's where they're at, you know, was looking for better from Big Bad Brett, all right? And he wants to call us out because we took him off the schedule to play Notre Dame. But, again, they need to make some noise down there. They need to make some noise down there because, again, you left with the expectation of competing for the SEC championship somewhere, and they haven't done anything. And I got one more. I got one more because there's a whole lot of talk about this team, and they have not produced at all, okay, since T. Martin graduated. And this is the University of Tennessee, okay? Now, they've given a lot of talk about all the players they got coming back and all of this stuff, but they still have Florida on the brain. They can't get by Florida, even when they win it by two touchdowns with 2 minutes left. Okay? That's an untrustworthy team. Now, they got a lot of guys coming back, and some writers, dare I say, got them rated as high as number one in some polls. I wish I were drinking what they were drinking. I bet you Paul Chris was drinking what they were drinking. He wouldn't hurt so much about the schedule. But I digress. These are teams right now that look good on paper. Even they got some pretty uniforms. But you can't trust them as far as you can throw them left-handed with a broken elbow.
Now, I'm going to defend two of my guys. One, I just had a chance to meet him last year, is Josh Dobbs. I think he's going to do his thing over in Tennessee, and they've been building towards this. I mean, they went from wreckage. They had to survive the Lane Kiffin years. And I think Arkansas had to go through some of those same things, terrible program stuff, moving out and transition out. But I think Josh, I got a feeling that Josh is going to have a great year over here in the East. And so Tennessee has been building towards it, never have an expectation of not making it. I give them a little bit of leeway. And the reason why I didn't name Arkansas, not because I know Brett. I can be critical of him as well, and I will be. But I also think he had to do the same time of change to culture. And he's had some major victories even in those first years against some major teams even over in the West, right? So he's had major victories against some of those tough teams. You know, now he's got them consistently winning. So it ain't like he hasn't beaten some of those top teams over in the Western part of the SEC. So I give him that. But, yeah, this year, I mean, we talked about it. I think he said it himself when he was on the air with us. Y'all want to check out his interview, that he knows this is the year to really try to turn the corner. He's got some good talent doing. So I agree it's time for him to do the breakout here. So I'm with you on that one. I'm just rooting for my boy Josh Dobbs. Anybody who's majoring in engineering and a top-level quarterback, I got to go for the brother on that one. But you can't
well,
take Hank. Hank ripped
him, but again, this segment is called "Who Do You Trust and Who Do You Don't Trust."
Yeah.
So until they do something different, I don't trust them. I got to add one more. I meant to add, and this was more of a dig than it was an ad. But I would be remiss if I didn't the University of Mississippi and Hugh Freeze.
I was going to talk about the Mississippi teams, all of them.
Yes,
they've been hyped.
I mean, I kind of got going on that. But you know, you got to say something about him spending time with his family, you know, during the summertime, and so he got to take time away from his team while he's paying his players and doing their homework for him. But then they go and lose games to your hall they're supposed to win. So that's another thing that's untrustworthy, both on the field and off the field.
I was going to say something about the state of Mississippi is in trouble with can't trust the list. Well, hey, we're about to go into what I think is probably the best radio, best podcast on the planet, Inside the Park with Hank. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball before we close the show up and talk some NFL talk. So here we go with Inside the Park segment.
Right.
This time of the year. because it used to be once upon a time you had two divisions in each league, and it was pretty much over for everybody else. It was already done and over with, and you could start packing up your clothes and doing whatever you do, get the kids ready for school, but you can't do that this year. You got too many teams that's really pushing for the playoffs. You got six teams within five games in the final playoff spot in the American League. In the National League, you got three teams within four games of the final playoff spot. You got teams like Seattle and Houston, and you got teams, St. Louis is already in there, but you got all these different teams that's fighting and battling and scraping for playoff spots. So this is what we look forward to for the next month and a half for the search for October. But, you know, the beauty thing about this is we're actually seeing some real good baseball, too. We're seeing some good baseball. You're really starting to see what people and what managers are really, what moves they need to make, what teams need to make, what clubs need to make, what offices need to make to see if they can really make that playoff push. But let's look at some of the players this year that are really keeping it going. Here we are in late August, and, I mean, you look at some guys, they always get off to a great start. But you want to see, can they sustain this? And has anybody been paying a lot of attention to Mookie Betts? Mookie Betts is blowing it up in the American League. We talked about Mookie Betts early in the year, you know, playing and all of his hitting streaks and everything. But it was like, that's a nice little story. But this young man right now is really putting it together. He is an MVP, legitimate, folks, MVP candidate, hitting over 300, right there in runs scored, right there in RBIs, right there just doing everything. And he's a 5-tool player. Did you watch the game the other day? Just guns out the player at home. Just a strong arm, 5-tools, got speed, can hit for power, and he's putting it together. He might be our modern-day Willie Mays. You heard it here first, but we got to keep watching. And Chris Bryant with the Cubs. There's another one. You remember this young man didn't even start the season last year. He had that remarkable spring training. But then all of a sudden the Cubs decided to send him on down. But now you see that he's doing his thing right now with the Cubs. He's an MVP candidate. You know, if a scientist could take Theo Epstein is the general manager of the Chicago Cubs. If they could take Theo Epstein's DNA, if they could clone this cat and give him to teams like Colorado, give him to teams like Cleveland, give him to teams like Houston. You know what I'm talking about. All these different teams that never won the World Series. This man is a curse breaker. The Chicago Cubs right now, starting play today, was like 13 games in first place. Okay, they were 13 games ahead in first place, and they are blowing teams' door off. They got players like Chris Bryant. They got pitchers like Jake Arrieta. They go and get they just got everything going on for them this year. All right, and this man knows how to build a team. This is the man that finally broke the curse, put the team together that broke the curse for the Boston Red Sox. And now he's doing it for the Chicago Cubs. All right, so, I mean, you got to look at something like that and say, you know, what is he doing? He should write a book. He's already making good money, but he should write a book on how to build a team or how to break team curses. I'm pretty sure that a lot of GMs out there will be standing in line to try to get that book. So let's move on a little bit. Let's see what's been going on in baseball since the last time we had an opportunity to chat. Well, we see that A-Rod has finally given his farewell. Well, let's say that the Yankees gave their farewell to him. And so he's gone. But you have to ask the question for how long. Here's a man who I think is four or five home runs away from 700 home runs. All right, so now he's retiring, or the Yankees, they're done with him. They actually have him sit out and play his last game on a Friday night. Couple of weeks ago, he gives another one of these crocodile tear farewells, and you could tell when you're looking at Alex Rodriguez that he's playing to the camera. He's definitely playing to the camera that there's nothing genuine about this cat at all, but there he is. He wants to keep playing. What player in their right mind that close to 700 home runs don't want to play? But he's got so much baggage. He's got more baggage than a Delta Airline terminal. Don't nobody want to be bothered with it. But he wants to try to play. Lo and behold, he may get an opportunity. I said may. I didn't say he would, but he may. Why is that? Because Giancarlo Stanton, long baller for the Miami Marlins, is hurt. He's got a groin pull. Some say he may be out for the season or at least till late September. All right? They need to try to get a bat in there. There's talk that Alex Rodriguez is available. Alex Rodriguez is from the Miami area. Okay? But you also got to understand that the company that got Alex Rodriguez gets banned in the first place is also down there. So I don't know if you're the Miami Marlins, do you want that PR nightmare? But there is a possibility there. The Miami Marlins are in the wild card hunt. All right, so what do you do there? So there's that. So you got that dynamic going on. Last time we talked, we was looking at Ichiro finally getting his 300th hit, 3,000th hit. He got it. Got a triple, got his 3,000th hit. Beautiful story, you know. One of the most well-decorated Japanese players in the major leagues, and he well-deserved it. Nice job, young man. We also see that Prince Fielder had to retire. Last time we talked about Prince Fielder, we were talking about the injury to his neck, and he was going to be out for the season. He since announced his retirement. It was a career-ending injury, and it's too bad. You know, he was one of the most feared power hitters in the league when he was with Milwaukee, also with the Detroit Tigers, and going on with Texas. The Texas thing just did not work for him, and it's unfortunate. You know, still young and still had an opportunity to perform, but unfortunately that neck injury was just too severe. Oddly enough, though, he finished with the same amount of home runs as his dad, Cecil Fielder, at 319. So there's a bit of irony. So how about that? The Fielder's at 319. Also, Mark Teixeira, first baseman for the New York Yankees, also announced his retirement after the end of this season. And you know what? You look at the Yankees, and here we go with the New York look Yankees. All of a sudden, they let a lot of these old players go to other teams. Carlos Beltran got traded away. You know, Aroldis Chapman got traded away. They're going to release McCann. So they're getting younger. They're trying to do like they did before they won the World Series in 06. '96. They're trying to bring these young men. They're trying to get young in the Derek Jeter years. When Derek Jeter came with that team, when Jorge Posada came with that team, when you had a young Mariano Rivera, they're doing that again. And you can see some of the young talent with the Yankees that's starting to get a chance to play. It's a shame that it's taken them so long to just kind of like rebuild and regroup with that team. You know, we're in a different age of baseball right now. You just can't buy your way to the championship like you used to. And the Yankees are starting to figure it out. And it's kind of refreshing to watch. I'm not a big Yankee fan, but it is kind of refreshing to watch some of this young talent that they have on the farm get an opportunity to play. And, oh, by the way, the Yankees are in the hunt, too. They're seven games out of the last playoff spot. But, you know, they're still playing meaningful baseball into late August and going into early September. So that's at least something that the fans in New York can at least get their hands around and get their heads around. We also want to give another shout-out to the great Big Poppy. You know, here we go, Big Poppy, the oldest man to hit 30 home runs, okay? He hit his 30th home run the other night, and he's the oldest player to reach 30 home runs in the season. So, I mean, the man continues to play. It's amazing to me that he's saying this is it, and he just continues to put up numbers. You know, so you just got to keep an eye out for that. Boston is having an amazing season right now. Tied for first place, got some incredible young talent on that team. And also the resurgence of Rick Porcello. And I'm not trying to make this a Boston show, but you will be remiss if you're not looking at what's going on over there in Beantown. Here's the same Rick Porcello that spent most of his career with the Detroit Tigers and was the fourth option. Now, he's close to winning 20 ball games this year and is a Cy Young candidate. I shook my head when I think about that. I think about the fact that Rick Porcello is a Cy Young candidate for this year. You know, when you think about the Detroit Tigers, you could kick yourself, and I do as a Tiger fan, when you think about Rick Porcello, when you think about Max Scherzer, when you think about Doug Fister, all playing for other teams and all getting work done, you know. And here we are, you know, with someone just finding anything and anybody to piece together sometimes outside of Justin Verlander, not named Justin Verlander or not named Michael Fulmer, to try to put on a mound. So that's what that's all about. The Boston Red Sox right now have an amazing season along with the Toronto Blue Jays. With that being said, though, we'll transition to some teams that aren't having a good season, which means that you start getting to that transition point. Not everybody is in the playoff hunt. Not everybody is in the playoff hunt. You have some teams that, you know, their season is pretty much over, and they've got what they call highway eyes. So let's look at what those teams are going to do, and let's look at some of the managers of those teams. You know, I want to look first at the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, okay, and Mike Socha. Now, Mike Socha has got arguably one of the best players in the major leagues, and Mike Trout that plays for him. He also has Albert Pujols, who's setting records still, even at an advanced age. He's got, when you look at him on paper, a decent team. But for some reason, Mike Socha, over the course of the last several years since their World Series win, has not been able to get this team over the top, despite spending from the front office. And yet he remains as manager. I know back when I had RJ and Mike on air, I said that Mike Socha should have been gone then. You guys remember how long that's been, and he's still there. This is a last place team, all right, the Angels. It should not be. It should not be. And it's time for them, for another voice to be in that dugout, in my opinion. Let's also look at Bob Melvin over in Oakland. I don't think Bob Melvin is a bad manager by any stretch, but Oakland is Oakland. And that's not the same team from a few years ago that had Cespedes, that had Donaldson, that had Reddick, that had Sonny Gray when he was healthy. This is a different Oakland team. They're going in a different direction. This is a veteran manager that probably should be with a team that is ready to win. So I think that, you know, to save him, you know, Oakland should go ahead and let him go to another team that is ready to win. You know, and again, Oakland is not ready to win right now, not in my opinion. They're not going to spend any money. In fact, they were giving away assets, which they did when they let Josh Reddick go to the Dodgers. And then finally, I have to say the Detroit Tigers manager, Brad Ausmus. In my opinion, the Brad Ausmus experiment has failed. All right, this is a veteran team that just a few years ago went to the World Series, got swept by the Giants, got to the American League Championship Series in which they lost to Boston. All right, then when Jim Leland decides to retire, you go to Brad Ausmus. Brad Ausmus is quite arguably one of the worst managers with a decent team in the major leagues. That's being nice, all right, and it's abysmal because you have players that are still producing like your Miguel Cabreras, like your Justin Verlanders, like a J.D. Martinez, like a Nick Castellanos. You have players on that team that this team should be competing in, yet they are one of the most inconsistent teams in the major leagues. And the problem with that is that when you start seeing teams being that inconsistent, you got to start looking at the preparation of the manager to those teams. Even at the pro level, your manager has to prepare your team week in and week out, day in and day out, to be prepared, especially going into a late pennant run. All right, the Detroit Tigers had a 9-game winning streak in which they went on the road and immediately lost 7 of their last 8. Now they're rebounding again. This has been the roller coaster ride that has been all season. Now, I know baseball's a long year, but the good managers, the Pat Metheny's of the world, that know how to keep your team consistent throughout a 162-game season so they're competing at the end, are the kind of managers that either you're doing it or you don't. Perfect example, look at what the Washington Nationals did. Okay, they had Matt Williams, probably a good, very good baseball man. Matt Williams had a veteran team, could not get that team over the top. Matt Williams is gone, and now what do they do? They go and find themselves a veteran manager in Dusty Baker, who arguably could be the manager of the year in the National League. Washington is doing work. The manager does matter. The coaching staff does matter. You see it across the board. You get a bad manager, you get a bad coach, you get a bad somebody who's running your team, and they'll make a good team look bad or they'll make a good team look mediocre. In that case, that's what has to happen. Conversely, when you have good managers, you can turn mediocre teams or average teams into great teams, and you can turn great teams into phenomenal teams. Which brings me to my next point, which is could be baseball's bizarro world. Imagine, if you will, we're going to take you to the Twilight Zone right now. Imagine, if you will, a world where you are into October, where you're looking out over Wrigley Field, where you have the Cubbies, the Chicago Cubs, going against the Cleveland Indians. Dun, dun, dun. A sure sign of the apocalypse, folks, if anything like that were to happen. Can you imagine two teams playing in the World Series, trying to both break curses of long-standing championship droughts? Now, Cleveland, Believeland, y'all kind of got off the skid a little bit. But can you imagine if the Chicago Cubs make it to the World Series and, dare I say, win the World Series this year? Folks, 2016 will go down as a year of confusion, a year of wonder, a year of what the heck just happened, a year in which you lose Prince and Muhammad Ali in the same year. It will be the same year that Cleveland wins a championship, competes for another, and the Cubs, oh my goodness, the Cubs could possibly win the World Series. I shudder to think of it. The skies would open up. The four horsemen would come down. No, that wouldn't happen because the Detroit Lions are still the Detroit Lions. But back to baseball. So now we're going to talk about the Grand Slam Series of the week. As we've talked about now over the last few minutes, we've been talking about that we're in the hunt for October, and we've got some good baseball to watch. All right, so the Grand Slam Series of the week, there's two of them that you got to watch if you're a baseball fan. You want to see some good, solid baseball with some good, solid teams. You got to watch what's going on out west. Well, you've got that rivalry coming all the way across country from New York out to California where the Giants is going against the Dodgers. Three games to separate these teams as of tonight, and they're going to be going at it to the end of the season. Another one you want to watch is two of the best teams in the American League as the Indians go out to Arlington to battle the Rangers. That's going to be a good one because the Rangers just got through playing the Reds. Yu Darvish, the pitcher, hit a home run, his first ever home run in the American League or in the major leagues. So that's going to be something to watch. Four of the best teams in baseball going at each other. You don't want to miss it. That series starts tomorrow. And got to always mention the swing and a miss series of the week. So if you're a young man and you're trying to impress your date, you're going to go out to a date, you want to take them to a professional game, but you don't want to spend a whole lot of money. You got a couple of bucks to see the stadium going to be empty, and y'all can have the whole place to yourself, and you can tell whatever lie you want to tell. Take her to the Braves versus the Diamondbacks, okay, out there in Arizona. It'll be nice and warm, y'all be in there all by yourselves. These two teams got a combined record of 49-77. That's 28 games under 500, folks, if you're doing a count. And they're a combined 23 games out of first place. So if you just got to go see somebody, even if you want to sit there and have a hot dog and just look at the uniforms, that would be the game you would want to go and see. So that's going to be our segment for tonight. We will see. We will talk to you in a couple of weeks. And listen here, this is Inside the Park. Ball game over. Y'all drive home safe.
Steve, right.
we got to get that some more applause. My guy Hank, once again, as I say, it's the best segment in podcast radio, Inside the Park, re-energizing baseball, bringing it back in. You know, Hank is killing me, and the swing and miss of the week series is cracking me up. If you want to take a date, it out. I almost lost it. I'm glad I was off here. the Yasiel Puig thing was just it blew me away that like this guy was. Like the thing folks were talking about a few years ago, they're talking about, you know, they sending him down to the minors. I mean, it was just, man, it was like, man, it was all good just a year ago kind of thing. I just could not believe how quickly that turned south for him. So, you know, Bobby, that's what he needed to get back on track. But that's crazy.
Right.
Man, baseball, like you said, is here. So we're going to spend a few minutes, man, talking about the NFL. You know, obviously, you know, college football, NFL, Hank and I will be here on one mic touching on this throughout the year. But it's the preseason. There's a lot going on in the NFL. You know, we got Hard Knocks. We got all kinds of stuff. You know, just like college football, you know, as Hank said, this is the best part of the year because, you know, we find ourselves, you know, talking about, you know, a lot of football. And football, you know, football is becoming, you know, I think people like Hank are really trying to bring back baseball and really give it a face. You know, we were really trying to do that on the RSG space. But football is still king. And NFL is here and no bigger king than that. I didn't have this on the rundown, but I saw the James Harrison stuff. And obviously, you know, I hear on his and hers and some of these other podcasts, talk about his digital line stepping. But if you listen back at our podcast with myself, you know, Phil and Game Changer, we were calling Roger Goodell the habitual line stepper long before everybody else was calling him that. But he comes again. And what I love about James Harrison, I'm a Steeler fan, but I love about him, he's just not going to have it. And So, Hank, I know we didn't have it sort of rundown, but again, like, it feels like NFL can't get out of its way with some of these issues.
Right.
What do you make of James Harrison's response to this and how they're handling this, given how they handled Peyton and given that Al Jazeera is no longer a really functioning news network? It's defunct right now. And yet they still want these guys to come in and they're threatening to lose some games. Like, what was your reaction?
Well, you know, that was the thing about it for me, is that they had threatened to suspend him. And I don't blame James Harris. And like he said, y'all put it across the scroll just like you did it this way. And you tell them everything is clear to charges. You know, and there's a double standard in the NFL, and we know it. And we've seen it. Okay?
Yeah.
The thing is all screwed up. You know, you take a report right there. There's no substantiated evidence, but you want folks to come in and cooperate on that. And then you did have something on Peyton Manning. All right, now, even though it was years ago, but you know, it wasn't handled the same way. And Roger Goodell is just suspension crazy on the most menial things he really needs to address, doesn't address right. But stuff like this, he ready to have guys losing games over. You know, I don't blame him. I would be more outspoken if I knew I wasn't wrong.
And I think he's. And we'll keep an eye on it. I mean, it's just continuous things when you got a really good product that it just seems like, you know, one of the things about some leadership is that humility can take you a long way. Even though you have the power, great leaders understand when not to use it. And, you know, I feel like the NBA kind of gets it right. And, you know, I mean, some of these other leagues have a sense. The NBA, I think, is really good at this, knowing when to use power and when not to. And when would to be in collaboration. I think the NFL has never quite found this. Always been this we own you kind of league rather than seeing opportunities to have partnerships for the long-term standing of leagues. Because even though some of these players are not going to be playing long careers, people like James Harrison are going to be your alums, are going to be your people who carry the torch with some of your new players coming in. And you need to also understand how you treat them even in how you think about treating a Peyton Manning. So I think you hit it right on. One of a couple quick things I want to hit before we
– he thinks he's bigger than the league, and that's the one thing the players stand. They make the league. He just runs it.
Yeah. But I think part of it is because the owners give it to him. And he's an extension of what they really want and how they really feel. And NFL owners, like most owners, owners come from a class they used to have in control. And, you know, in the way they view these things as business and the way they talk about players as assets, all of these things are symbolism of how they feel about these players that create the animosity that could really make the league healthier if they could find a way to find common ground. And it just, you know, it hasn't been good since Gene Upshaw and some of them have been. I mean, that was when, you know, people complained about Gene Upshaw, but I think some of the things that Gene Upshaw and them were able to do was at least find a common ground, and I'm not seeing any of that right now. How can you be the Super Bowl champion and still be trying to figure out your quarterback situation? I mean,
you know what?
The Denver stuff is – talk to me.
I can't speak on it. I mean, you know, listen to these names. Tell me if this stirs the pot any for you. Trevor Siemian, Mark Sanchez, Paxton Lynch. Do you just feel like running around the house when you hear those names?
I just, I'm with you. I think Elway's a smart guy. They just fumble this whole thing. You know, they don't fumble too many things, but this one is one that they just, it's a mess. And they'll figure out how to overcome it, but it's just one of those things that is crazy. And given the time, like, are there one or two teams as we wrap up here that you think that you have concerns about based on what you've seen so far?
Well, listen, I look at Cincinnati. I'm really kind of interested at what's going on in that camp. Okay, if you remember the Cincinnati Bengals, you remember that debacle in Cincinnati where their team just lost their mind. I'm just kind of I'm interested in, you know, how they move on. What do they do? What do they look like this year? And then the only other concern I got about the preseason is Trevor Siemian, Mark Sanchez, and Paxton Lynch.
Hank has said it all, y'all. We are teeing up because the next time we come on the air, we'll be close to the beginning of the season, and we'll start to tee up some of our picks for the NFL, and we'll give you some deeper thoughts based on what we see out of this opening weekend of college football. But we really enjoyed this experience, everybody. You know, this is One Mike, and, you know, we look forward to you joining us on our next podcast.